Welcome to 2016, everyone. If you didn't know already, this here is Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, and this week, my friends, we're taking you to a place where dreams really do come true. A special place tucked away in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon. And no, we're not taking up arms. We're taking up some R&D. Did you know that there is a foundry in Medford, Oregon? Not exactly the tech capital of the world, I know, but nestled in the rain shadow, and yes, that really is a thing, between the Cascade Range and the Siskiyou Mountains sits a very unique foundry, specializing in semiconductor, biotechnology, nanotechnology, and MEMS services for companies large, small, and everywhere in between. Let me introduce you to Jessica Gomez, CEO of Rogue Valley Micro Devices. Hi, Jessica. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So you're the CEO of Rogue Valley Micro Devices. Now, for my audience who may not know, what do you guys do?
We are a MEMS foundry, a smaller MEMS foundry, but we are on 200 millimeter substrates. So we're kind of a little bit unique in that respect.
You guys offer a wide range of foundry services. So tell me more about the different flavors of foundry services you offer.
Sure. We started out just offering thin films way back about 10 years ago when we started the company. So we have developed a wide variety of different variations of dielectric films and metal, things like that. And then in addition, we have all of the sort of photolithography capability. We have some front-to-back alignment. We have spray coating. So we have a good set of MEMS capability.
So tell me more about the MEMS R&D part of Rogue Valley Micro Devices. You guys can help the smaller MEMS companies develop their designs. Is that right?
Sort of. So I guess our customer base is kind of a mixed customer base. We have some small companies we work with. We have mid-size, and then we have some of our larger companies. And we sort of do similar things for each customer group with respect to MEMS fabrication. So our smaller customers, a lot of times they're coming right out of, let's say, a university fab, and they're really looking for a company that can provide them with a more repeatable process. Maybe they're struggling with how to make their process more manufacturable. Sometimes within that, there comes some design modifications to kind of make that chip more manufacturable. We can kind of work with their team to get to a point where, you know, they're getting really good, consistent quality, process is repeatable, and then they can start doing some of these rapid prototyping things that they'd like to get to where, you know, maybe they are issuing a mass change with every order, maybe they're doing some experimentation with certain aspects of their design. But because we have a pretty repeatable process, we can get those chips turned around pretty quickly for them. And then our mid-size customer base, they're maybe doing, I would say, pilot production volume. So it's lower volume, but they still want the added benefit of going with a larger wafer size. So that saves money also and saves time for them. And so we're kind of working with them in the same way where we're supporting their maybe pilot production level needs, but they're also working on process improvement. They're working on improving their technology as well. So we have sort of a mix of production and R&D kind of stuff going on at the same time. And then, you know, our larger customers, what's interesting about them is that a lot of them have their own production facilities where they're making 5 or 6 different chips in a captive fab and they're doing high volume. But their R&D team can't always get access to the equipment in that fab. And so they'll come to a company like us and say, do you think you'd be willing to take a look at this new material? What do you think about doing this, making this chip in this way? Can you kind of help us develop a process for this new technology and then help us transfer it back into our own fab? And we've done that pretty successfully for a number of companies.
So you guys are based in Medford, Oregon. So my audience may not know, but that's a pretty small town in Southern Oregon. Not a lot of high-tech companies down there. Why did you guys choose Medford to be based out of?
Yeah, that's a good question. When we first started this company, or thought about starting the company, we were just coming off of kind of working for an optical startup in Southern California. We learned a lot at that company. It was a lot of fun, but it only lasted about 3 years. The company was kind of developing an all-optical switch, and we actually made it. The box worked really well, but ultimately the company didn't really survive the downturn after September 11th and whatnot. So when we kind of went through the process of shutting down that company, we were not sure if we wanted to stay in Southern California. We wanted to be sort of near family. We were thinking about starting our new company, but the cost in California was, at that time, really high. You know, around that time was the whole thing with Enron, so energy was extremely expensive there. Leasing a potential building was really expensive, so we were looking for an alternative location that was within driving distance that we could kind of set up a new facility at where we get back and forth to, and we also would be near family and was affordable. And so when we started making the drive to Medford and Ashland area, we were able to get together with the local economic development folks, and we got a really warm reception from them. They would meet us on, like, Saturday mornings. We would leave our current jobs, drive up here about 10 hours or something like that on Friday evening, and then Saturday morning we would meet with our real estate agent, meet with the local economic development people, meet with the fire department, the fire marshal and building department, and try to get a sense of what it would be like to set up a MEMS facility here, because there wasn't really anything like it and still isn't. We're still the only MEMS facility between, I think, Eugene and Sacramento.
That's fantastic. So speaking of Medford, you're involved with a lot of public service around the Medford area. Tell me a bit about that in your outside of work life.
Yeah, so through the process of building this company, and it was a lot of work. It was more work than we had anticipated. Kind of after about the five-year mark, I had a much greater appreciation for entrepreneurship and started getting involved with that local economic development agency. It's called SoReady, that helped us set up our company here. And I just wanted to give back to the community and do something that I thought would help create a more vibrant economy. This area, Southern Oregon, and actually Oregon's probably not unique in this way, but there's a lot of rural area, and the rural economies are a bit different than some of what goes on in urban America. And we have a lot of diverse companies, but we don't have a lot of density. And so it makes it an additional challenge to do this kind of work. And we have some really great technology-based companies here, but we have one of each. And so it's a pretty interesting environment to do this kind of work in.
Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Jessica. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And now it's time for a little news you may have missed. This has nothing to do with consumer electronics and everything to do with space. Edition. Now, folks, many of you out there are probably wondering to yourself, how do astronauts deal with radiation exposure in space? Until recently, they didn't, really. Previous radiation detectors could only reveal how much exposure an astronaut had received after their return to Earth. Helpful, right? That is, until now. Researchers at the Tyndall National Institute recently collaborated with the European Space Agency to create the first real-time wearable personal radiation monitor to be used in space. This new system can not only measure radiation in real time, but can also instantly warn astronauts of increased and dangerous radiation levels. So, how does this new space radiation monitor work? This device, called a personal radiation dosimeter system, is actually made up of two parts. A phone-sized mobile unit worn in a pouch on the astronaut's body, and a personal storage device, which is a docking station to recharge the mobile unit and is used to download data and transmit it back to Earth. Now, the mobile part of this device recently returned from a testing on the International Space Station. And get this, for the first time ever, radiation levels were actively monitored during its launch into space on board the Soyuz spacecraft. So, the goods inside the mobile unit. That's some good stuff. Developed by a small team of researchers at the Tyndall National Institute in Ireland, and in close collaboration with the Institute's semiconductor fabrication plant, this mobile unit contains four different types of radiation sensors, and each sensor covers a different type or spectrum of radiation. This mobile unit can not only show the radiation levels in real time and can tell astronauts if the dose goes above a certain threshold, but it also enables a time-resolved personal radiation record for each astronaut. And the best part for all you astronauts in training, this personal active dosimeter will be on its way to a permanent installation on the International Space Station in June of this year. So cool. Or hot, as the case may be. So, if you want any further information about this project, the groundbreaking work being done at the Tyndall National Institute, or even to geek out on a white paper called European Crew Personal Active Dosimeters, oh yes, I've got you covered. Just check out the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. We also have a YouTube channel, keyword EEJournal, chocked full of all kinds of techie videos, our very own popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to that EE Journal YouTube channel as well. I'm just saying. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Hey, thank you so much for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, even if your company makes it, that's totally cool. Any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or tell me how CES was this year. Sad face. Or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of January 8th, 2015, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.